don't try to bring a great property manager to a new market. Other people will do it and they'll do fine with it. I've seen that a couple times, not just in my own deals, but in other people's deals. And so I like to see who's got established relationships. It's the relationships with vendors in the market, with staff, with other things. If they're from another market, even if it's 2 hours away, it's going to be really hard sometimes to find new people, staff members for the property, or even vendors that come in and work. And I've just seen it. And these property managers will be very, oh, we'll come in and we'll do this. And everyone wants to expand, but I just prefer not to be the first one that they're expanding on, you know? So that's, I think, the biggest thing.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Bronson Hill is the managing member of Bronson Equity. He is a general partner in 1,400 multifamily units worth over $120 million. Bronson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, really excited to be here with you. I love talking about real estate and love talking about scaling business and really excited for the conversation.
Hey, man, it's loads of fun. I'm looking forward to jumping in here. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, so I was a high paid consultant in the medical field, worked with a lot of physicians. Realized the time for money trade, even for physicians that were getting paid a lot of money. Some physicians I knew worked 80 hours a week and made millions of dollars, literally, but it was too much and they didn't have freedom of time. And so that was most important to me. Started with single family, did a small single family portfolio. Then I had a chance meeting with a cousin I hadn't seen since I was a kid. And he said, why don't you do multifamily? I said, well, I'd love to, but I don't have the money. He said, you can raise the money. And I just, you know, he said, read this book, go to this podcast, you know, do all this stuff and learn. And I did it. And basically a couple of years later, I raised a total of about $15 million and was able to leave my great corporate job that I thought there were golden handcuffs. And now I'm doing real estate full-time. We've got about $150 million in multifamily assets, mostly in the Southeast. And just loving it, man. It's just such a great business to be in.
Man, that's fantastic. I love the truncated stories because they make it sound like, you know, it was just one success after another.
Just happened, yeah.
And then, oh my gosh, look at this. 150 million bucks later, we're rocking and rolling and we didn't hit a single speed bump, but I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Tell me some things that were some challenging pivotal moments maybe where, you know, you're like, ah, oh, crud, we're at an intersection here. What did you do?
Well, like you said, there's a few of them. I think that one of the biggest ones is just, it's so hard to get going. I mean, I'd say over those couple of years, it took me kind of about a year to really get going. And that's not uncommon. You know, there's this a friend of mine, Michael Blanc, that says, he talks about the law of the first deal. Like getting the first deal can take a long time. But once you get the first deal done, once you're a general partner on a deal, the doors start to open. People look right at you as an insider and it changes everything. So for me, I started kind of through some of the books I was reading. I realized starting a meetup was a really great idea. So I just encourage anybody listening, if they want to get into real estate, multifamily, just start a meetup. And this is literally how it went for me. So I was doing single family. I had a larger meetup in town where I had, you know, been going for a number of years. I basically approached this person and said, hey, let's start another meetup that's only multifamily and I'll lead it. I'll do all the work and we'll lead it together. She said, sure. We started leading at the first meeting. We had 60 people there. And basically, I found my first investor there. He's like, I'd invest in you in one of your deals. And I was thinking, I don't even have a deal. But I got together with him for coffee and showed him what a deal would look like. And then I introduced him to another guy I met at that same meeting. And so that kind of got me started. So I raised $100,000 for a deal. But it took a while before I found kind of the right partners. And I was really able to scale up after that.
Yeah. Talk to us about the partner search. I mean, you know, there's the life partner search, then there's the business partner search, and they both seem to take an inordinate amount of time. Tell me about the business partner search.
Yeah. So I think in general, you know, you're looking for partners, a few things. One is obviously character. You know, you want to know you're working with somebody that you can trust, somebody that, you know, has your interest in mind, will really have similar values to you. So I spent a lot of time, I get a lot of people bring me a lot of deals and they're like, I want to partner with you on this, or I want to work with you here. But I really come back to like, is this somebody that I can trust? And it takes time to figure that out. Reputation is huge. It's a pretty small industry. So I try to work with people that I know or that are kind of well-known in our circle. And I also do a background check on every partner as well, just to see if there's something that I'm missing in that process. But I think in general, you know, being kind of looking at how you like what your strengths are. So my background was medical sales. And so there's kind of two routes people go. Either you find deals, if you're more of an engineer type, or you love numbers or CPA, you can kind of go the route of finding deals or networking brokers and kind of be in more of the operations. Or you work with investors and create content and you're more of kind of a sales type of role. So those are kind of two routes for me. I kind of realized, you know, if I'm more on this side, I need to partner with people that are really good on the operations space. So I've got one of my partners now has over 10,000 units, has been doing it for 25 years, has a great track record, great experience. So my lack of experience in asset management is not a shortcoming, right? Because I have a partner who's handling all of that, which is really great. So finding complementary partners, I think both in, you know, as a life partner, as well as in business, I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about raising money. I know you said for the first deal, you raised $100,000. I mean, that doesn't go far in a multifamily investment.
Yeah. So yeah, the first, something I left out there, actually, one of the challenges is I went to all my friends and family and I said, yeah, hey, we got this great multifamily deal. And I had something like 62 conversations with friends and family, either in person or over the phone and the questionnaires and everything. And I had literally zero invest. And so, you know, it was challenging to go from there to, you know, to get the 100, you know, it wasn't a lot of money. Right. But what really got me going is I went to somebody that I saw really a lot of value from. And I basically said, hey, how's it going, you know, raising money? Because they were kind of more on the active side of teaching people how to syndicate, but they had a huge reach. And I was like, man, there's going to be people on here that are doctors or lawyers or retirees, and they don't want to go buy a building. So they're going to want to be more passive. But he just really wasn't focused on that. So I said, well, what if, you know, we created something here together where we had kind of a funnel and I would kind of do calls or kind of work with folks and we kind of set up a way for people to get involved. And so it really just, you know, dramatically increased the amount of money they were able to raise or we were able to raise together. So instead of 600K and having to do a second webinar, by the time, you know, a year and a half later, we raised $8 million in 24 hours for a deal. And so I had about 1,000 one-on-one phone calls with different investors to just, you know, try to qualify them, kind of tee them up for the next deal. So that was a great learning experience. Great way to cut my teeth. It wasn't all, you know, super easy. I was working full-time while I was doing that. So I was taking calls at 6 a.m., sometimes at 6 p.m. and just whenever I could find time to take these calls. It was crazy, but it was definitely worth it.
Yeah, that's really, really intriguing. And maybe we don't have to dig into the story too much, but like, that's one of the things that I think people commonly struggle with is finding the investors. So one of the things you did, if I hear correctly, is you found someone with a potential investor database, but wasn't really leveraging it for that end. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we worked together for a couple of years on some stuff. And then I branched off on my own about a year and a half ago. And since then, we've just continued to, I think we've raised about $6 million, around $6 million in 2021. And so we keep, you know, going after it, but it just gave me a lot of experience. And so a lot of times people, and I don't think mentorships are bad. I think they're good. And I think if somebody's a high net worth and they're busy and they need someone to kind of push them into it, you can do that. But I also think if you just look around and go to somebody who's a high value person and you say, how can I serve you? It can open up a lot of doors. It's amazing how it can open up doors.
Yeah, absolutely. The raise that, you know, you guys have done in the past, have they been 506Bs, 506Cs? And then why do you guys focus on one or the other?
Yeah, so we've done both. I've done a couple 506Cs. About a year ago, I did some 506Cs. And they were good. I mean, it was kind of, again, when I was more kind of launching my own thing. So I was working with this partner. I had to kind of really launch Bronson Equity, which is my group. And so I did some advertising and different things. And it, you know, it worked okay. I think 506B, you know, for kind of your network that you kind of privately share, people love the idea of like off-market deals or, hey, it's a special deal, but don't tell anybody, you know, kind of those right. kind of deals. And so, but 506C, the ones you can advertise or for credit only, I mean, they can be great too. They have, the SEC has actually made it a little bit easier to where you don't have to verify accredited status as often. So it's only once every 5 years. And then you can actually do some of it a little more. You don't have to always use third party. You can use documents and you just have to make sure that you're, I mean, there's, I don't know if I'm not an attorney to sort all that out, but it's gotten a little bit easier in that area.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I've heard that stat before, that it's every 5 years now. And yet, if you go to some of the third party verification sites, they'll still tell you it's only good for 90 days. So I haven't quite got the clarification on that. Maybe you and I can work on that when we get off air. But one of the other things that you're doing right now, I think you're still running the weekly meetup. What are some other things you're doing right now to stay in front of investors?
Yeah, so we have a monthly meetup. It's in person. It's called Phoebe's. So if anybody's in Southern California, we're in the city of Pasadena. So we usually, you know, we're getting back to it after COVID. It's been much more shut down here than I'm sure where you're at. But yeah, so I do that. We do a monthly virtual event, which is either on inflation or it's about multifamily investing. We bring several operators in and those have been very well attended and a lot of great feedback. Those are also available on YouTube, which I do a lot on YouTube. And then I try to go to a lot of live events. So I, as I mentioned, I was in an event last weekend. I'm headed to another one this weekend. And it's a great way, I think, to get eyeball with investors and just meet people. Because a lot of people don't really want to invest unless they've met you. I have had people that literally found me on YouTube and have watched my YouTube videos and they invested, which is amazing, right? But it's more uncommon than it is common. And I think I also do a podcast called The Mailbox Money Show. talking about different forms of passive investing. So I know your audience is a little more active, mine's a little more passive. So just a lot of professionals that are looking to, you know, reduce taxes, get, you know, out of Wall Street and find consistent returns.
Right, man. I love that. You're always working on deals. What are you doing right now, especially in the multifamily space, to find opportunity? Because it seems to be super competitive.
Yeah. So we closed about 1,000 doors last year. So we're growing a lot. We've got new stuff we're working on right now. And it's amazing when you're in a particular market, deals can come to you. I mean, we got a deal recently that it was a completely off-market deal so that we were the only ones at the table. And, you know, it's a very different experience than being one of 30 at the table or being one at, you know, one of 20 and having to try to make your case. But I think, you know, there's a couple ways. You know, one is through relationships. One of my partners, as I mentioned, the one who has, you know, 25 years of experience, knows a lot of people. And so we've bought some properties from one of these owners. And he's like, oh, I've also got this other property. And it's, you know, a property that's $300 or $400 a month under rent. And we're just seeing that, you know, just really didn't do a lot of work on it. We're able to get it from this particular seller. So sometimes it's your personal relationships with the seller. Other times it's just you own the property next door and the brokers are basically bringing the deals to you saying, hey, you know, how can we make this work? And yeah, we found that everything's for sale at the right price. We actually had a property that we weren't planning to sell for 5 years. We bought it in Jacksonville, Florida, which is one of our main markets we work on. Bought it for $27 million last March. And it was 288 units, kind of working class apartments. We sold it 9 months later in December for $37.5 million. So we made $10.5 million, almost, you know, close to double the investor equity in a short amount of time. And we're able to 1031 the majority of those investors into another deal. So, you know, it is hard to find deals. You know, markets are going crazy, but they are out there. And it's, if you're willing to do the work, you're willing to network, you're willing to try and you know, make offers and just keep going for it, you'll find something.
Right, man. That's really, really intriguing. Talk to us, you know, I guess we've talked a little bit about markets. We've talked about raising capital, talked about some of the hiccups you had early on. So let's talk a little bit about inflation and where you see the multifamily market going. Let's talk about that for a second. Is that okay?
Yeah. So we talk a lot about inflation, you know, some of our different events, something I'm a student of as well. You know, I think it's really important not just to look at real estate or multifamily real estate. A lot of people that really lost their shorts in 2008, 2009, they weren't paying attention to kind of the overarching economics of what's happening.
Right.
And there's some just incredible things happening we've never seen. I mean, they've created about 40% of the currency in existence just in the last 2 years.
Right.
And that's just staggering. So everything is going to cost more. Right. So the long-term, you know, effect is very inflationary. The dollar itself has lost 98% of its value since the Fed came into existence in 1913. So we know it's going to continue to happen. There's no way to stop it. So long-term it's there. But, you know, if interest rates rise, which is what everybody's talking about, will that cause asset prices in general to go down? I think in single family, it definitely could. Multifamily, maybe a little bit. But I think in general, inflation and rents typically go hand in hand. It's a little bit lagging for rents. But I think, you know, in general, if you have long-term debt or like a lot of the stuff we're doing now is 3-year, you know, fixed rate stuff that you can extend, you know, kind of bridge debt that you can extend, I still think there will be options that you can handle as long as they don't raise rates really sharply, which I don't think they're going to do. I mean, inflation is going to keep going up. They're going to kind of stagger. They just don't want to raise rates too high and all of a sudden have things crash. But it's a very interesting time right now. So you have these long-term inflationary factors and then some short-term deflationary risk. But I think multifamily is going to weather it really well.
Yeah, there's that. And then just like you said, the money printing, it's hard to say where this all winds up. What are some things you guys are doing just to make sure that your portfolio is buttoned up tight?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing, you know, we stay away from class A stuff, you know, no offense to anybody who's doing class A, but I think I personally think there's a lot of risk in class A type of apartments. People look at them, they're like, oh, this is so beautiful. Look at all the amenities. I'd love to live there. They're brand new apartments, but the returns are way lower. And this is what a lot of REITs own. And so for example, where I live in Pasadena, California, a 2-bedroom right now will go for $4,500 a month at some really high-end apartments, right? But if there's a recession, they're not going to get $4,500. They might get $3,000 maybe. So that's going to dramatically affect the returns. There'll be some losses there. So REITs will kind of go up during times like this, and then they will crest down. Now, what we do, Warren Buffett has this principle. He talks about the margin of safety, right? You have some sort of kind of margin of safety. If things don't go the way you want to create a margin of safety. And so one way is by being very conservative on the numbers that you're projecting, being more conservative. I'd much rather underpromise and overdeliver. The second thing is the value add approach in multifamily. So what that means is, you know, we don't just take brand new stuff. We're taking older stuff We're seeing, you know, rent increases of $200. If we spend $10,000 per unit, we can see those rent increases. So what happens is, even if rents in general go down, we still have that, you know, we made these properties better. And so the rents should hopefully be higher than they would have been otherwise. So it puts a little more margin of safety. That's also why the returns for value add multifamily are typically about twice what a lot of the Class A or the non, you know, stuff that you don't add value to, as it's much higher.
Right. And the other thing with your value add is that if you get halfway through, you renovate half the units and it's like, hey, look, you know, we got to pump the brakes. You don't have to pump that money into the property necessarily.
Yeah. And we're seeing that. We're seeing sometimes, you know, this property I mentioned in Jacksonville, like we did a little bit of exterior work. We didn't really even get to much of the interior. And yet we saw, we already got to our number. So we're like, okay, well, everything's for sale at the right price. So, you know, that will happen. And that's the thing. And you can test it out. So the other thing, we have another Jacksonville property we closed on about 6 months, 5 months ago. And we expected, you know, $200 a month rent bumps. Well, we're seeing after renovating 10 of these, we're seeing about $350. So, you know, again, it depends on where you're buying, but we like to buy in places where we see that population growth. It's business friendly, landlord friendly, and, you know, warmer places, a lot of those kind of Southeast markets.
Yeah, man, that's absolutely intriguing. What is one piece of advice you would give to somebody that is looking to scale? Like, what would you say to somebody that said, hey, man, I want to get into multifamily. I want to follow in your footsteps. What would you tell them?
Well, I think the biggest thing you can do is to go to events, go to meetups, I would say meetups are good if you're in a metro area. If not, go to national events, go to events where there's going to be a lot of people there, and just start asking questions and start figuring out what people do and what's their biggest challenge. And also, you know, instead of just asking, hey, you know, what's the biggest success or what's going well, is ask them, you know, especially if you get started talking for a little bit, say, well, tell me about your biggest challenge or your biggest, you know, mistake or your biggest failure or something. And people will share. They'll say, oh yeah, you know, this has gone well, but man, let me tell you a story. And right. I think you learn more from those stories. There's actually a saying that says, a wise man learns from their own mistakes, but a genius learns from the mistakes of others. So if we get curious about that, it's amazing things that can open. But I do think the value of networking is just, you cannot underestimate how powerful that can be.
Man, that's so funny, because not 5 minutes before this phone call, I had somebody email me and they said, hey man, I hear you're going to, you know, such a conference here in a couple of weeks. You know, this is my position in business. I'm not really seeing the value in it. And I just kind of wrote back and I'm like, dude, like, here's the three reasons I always go to these large national events. And it's not for any of the reasons you said that, you know, you don't need to go. So anyway, I wholeheartedly second your comment there that, yeah, go to big events. It's amazing what you can learn just by being in the room.
Yeah, 100%.
That's fantastic. I think it's actually where you and I finally met here face-to-face not a month ago. So
yeah.
That's tons of fun. Let's jump here to the final four questions, Bronson. First one is this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
I think one tool or resource that I use a lot, there's a video service. For some of the content production that I do, because some of my business is creating, whether it's podcasts or different things like that, there's a kind of a screen recording service called Vidyard. And some people might say, well, that has nothing to do with real estate, but it records your screen as you're kind of going through, you know, pointing things out. It's really helpful rather than having to get on a call with somebody to be able to kind of explain a process, or even with an investor. I've had to do that with, here's how you get on your portal and here's how you do. And if you're working with busy people, any way you can kind of explain things and create a replicatable process. So when you have that question again, you can already just say, oh, I've got this, and you just send it over there, right? So
right. That's yeah, helpful. That's absolutely tremendous. And yes, you hit it nail on the head. And especially something where they can hit play, it's on demand at that point.
Yeah,
they're not exactly waiting for you to get on a call. So that's clutch. What is one mistake you can help our listeners avoid, and how would you avoid it?
I think the biggest challenge that we've had over the years, we had a property that no other easy way to say it, we just got the wrong property manager. And I think one thing I learned from this particular situation was, don't try to bring a great property manager to a new market. Other people will do it and they'll do fine with it. I've seen that a couple times, not just in my own deals, but in other people's deals. And so I like to see who's got established relationships. It's the relationships with vendors in the market, with staff, with other things. If they're from another market, even if it's 2 hours away, it's going to be really hard sometimes to find new people, staff members for the property, or even vendors that come in and work. And I've just seen it. And these property managers will be very, oh, we'll come in and we'll do this. And everyone wants to expand, but I just prefer not to be the first one that they're expanding on, you know? So that's, I think, the biggest thing.
That's a great piece of advice. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah. So my big why is really trying to stop human trafficking in the world. So today, 2022, there are 20 to 40 million human slaves in the world, more than there's ever been in the history of the world. And there's, you know, sexual human slavery, there's labor slavery, there's different things. And I've just gotten really involved. There's a cause I am involved with called Dressember. Actually, my sister started this and they've raised about $25 million for fighting human trafficking, for creating awareness, advocacy. And that's at dressember.org. People can check that out.
How do you spell that?
So it's just the word dress. So like DressEmber. So it's in the month of December they do it. So they combine the word dress with December. But guys wear bow ties, women wear dresses during the month of December. And it's a way that you can create awareness and try to stop human trafficking.
That's cool. Very good. Thanks, Bronson. Last question for you. For listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. So I created this special report. It's called The Single Best Investing Strategy During and After a Pandemic, 24 color pages. It just talks about a lot of the kind of the unfair advantages of multifamily investing. If somebody's interested in, you know, talking about, you know, partnership or looking at, you know, investing or just looking to kind of learn how to get moving, you can check that out at bronsonequity.com.
Thank you so much, Bronson. Have a great day.
Hey, Sam, thanks for having me. This was a great time.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.